It's hard to believe the summer is just flying right by. Here it is, the first Sabbath of August. Summer vacation is almost over. Camp meeting's behind us. Many of you have already taken your trips. A few are still out there making their journey, but slowly but surely, the church family's coming back together at the end of the summer, and I like it. It's great to have you here today. Many years ago, there was a very wealthy man. This man had it all. The problem was he never gave anything to the church. It came time for the annual church stewardship campaign, so the finance committee came to visit him in his home, and they said, because God has blessed you in such a significant way, we know that in the coming year you will want to make a generous gift to the church budget. And the man said, oh, I see, you've got it all figured out. Well, did you know, he said, that my elderly mother lives in a nursing home? It's very costly to keep her there, and there's no one to pay the bills but me. Did you know that? They said, no, we didn't know that. And the man said, did you know that my sister was abandoned by her drunkard husband and left to raise five children all by herself? Did you know that? No, we didn't know that, they said. And something else, he said, did you know that my brother was in a crippling accident? He will never work another day in his life, and he's completely dependent upon me for his support. Did you know that? By now, the committee was getting very embarrassed, totally red-faced, and they said, no, we didn't know that. Well, the man thundered, you need to know I haven't given any of them a dime, so what makes you think I'm going to give you anything? Selfishness is something we all struggle with to one degree or another. And so in his great plan to save us from sin and selfishness, God has given to us the gift of giving. And in the scriptures, this gift is so significant. It is one of the dominant themes. You will be interested to know that in the Bible, it talks about faith 246 times. It talks about hope 155 times. It talks about faith 733 times, and the Bible talks about giving 2,285 times. I'll tell you that stewardship and generosity was one of the favorite things that Jesus talked about. 27 of the 43 parables are about stewardship. They're about giving and the management of our money and our possessions. 1 out of 10 verses in the gospel has to do with the management of our money and our possessions. It is no wonder then that Billy Graham says to us, you tell me what you think about money, and I'll tell you what you think about God. And so today, we're going to talk about generosity. We're going to talk about giving and why that is so important. There are four things on my list today, and that first of these is that giving is an important part of becoming more and more like Jesus. You see, God is love, and God lavishes his love upon us. He's very generous with his love. That's why we read in James chapter 1, verse 5, God is a generous giver who neither refuses nor reproaches anyone. And the greatest evidence that we can see of that is in the cross. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Let me ask you, do you want to become a great lover? Do you want to become more and more like Jesus? Then learn to be a giver, because loving and giving go together. Now, you men who are married can remember very, very well what it was like when you first fell in love. When you first fell in love, you could not keep your money in your pockets, could you? I mean, you were always buying things for her. You were buying her flowers and candy and stuffed toys. And every time you went out together and something caught her eye, you bought it for her. Loving and giving go together, don't they? And when we're in love with Jesus, we want to give it all to him. And as we give, the most amazing thing happens. That old selfish nature just fades away. It goes off to another place, never to be seen again, and we become more and more like Jesus. I love the way that Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Do you want to find out where your heart is? Do you want to know what your great passion in life is? Just locate where you're putting your money. It's that simple. For some people, it's their home. For some, it's their business. It might be an investment or a hobby. All good things in their proper place. But when we give to God, and when we operate our whole financial system under God's guidance, when we seek to honor Him in every aspect of it all, money becomes like a magnet. Our heart is drawn toward it. And as we give that money to God, we are drawn toward Him. And we become more and more like Jesus. Now, we need to be very clear here that God does not need our money. He's not broke. He's not poor. God does not need our money. But I'll tell you something significant here. God is looking for what that money represents. It represents our hearts. And when we give our money to God, we are giving our hearts to Him. We are being drawn to Him. We become more and more like Jesus. The second thing that I'd like to talk about here is the way that giving breaks the grip of materialism in our lives. They say that materialism is driving to the mall in a car that you can't afford, to spend money you don't have, to buy things you don't need, to impress people you don't even like. That's the ridiculousness of the whole thing. There's a story that's told by Carl Hafner. He's the senior pastor of the Kettering Seventh-day Adventist Church. And one day he got a call from a man, and he said, "Hi, I'm Bill, and you don't know me. We've never met. But I've heard that you do really good funerals. My wife died last night, and I would like for you to conduct her funeral. I'll pay you whatever you charge." So Carl went over to meet the man, and the butler ushered him down the marble hallways filled with beautiful paintings, and passed three yapping poodles on into the parlor where Bill was waiting for him. Bill stood up and reached out to shake his hand. He was flashing enough gold to sink a yacht. So as they got talking about the funeral, Carl said, "Tell me about Elizabeth. What kind of person was she?" "She liked to shop," he said abruptly. So Carl wrote it down. "She liked to shop. Anything else?" "Well, let's see. She liked to shop." Carl underscored it three times, and he said, "Tell me, is there anything else I need to know about her?" And he said, "No, come with me." And he took her into this great big room filled with a truckload of silk and price tags. And he said, "See all these circular racks here? This is Elizabeth's blouse room. And as you can see, she didn't get to wear many of these blouses because the price tags are still hanging on them." Then he took her to the Imelda Marcos room, filled with enough shoes to outfit a night at the Oscars. Then he took him to the dress room and the fur room and the accessories room, and by now Carl got the idea. This lady really liked to shop. "One more thing before I go," Carl said. "Did Elizabeth like to support any charities? Did she give her time to serve anywhere? Did she dote over her grandchildren?" "No, no," Bill sighed. "All she ever liked to do was shop." Well, there weren't very many people at Elizabeth's funeral, and Pastor Carl opened it up for anyone to share a favorite memory or a testimony of how this woman's life had changed theirs, and there was this long, awkward silence, and finally somebody raised their hand and they said, "You know what the cool thing was about Elizabeth? She knew all the sales clerks at Saks Fifth Avenue." And someone else chimed in, "And she really liked to shop." Everyone nodded their heads, they said the final prayer, and that was it. I'll tell you, the only way to cure materialism is to give. Because the essence of materialism is to get. And when I give, I break the grip of materialism in my life. It is a spiritual victory. It is a countercultural move. It is a way of saying to the world, I just don't buy into the notion that my sense of joy and goodness in life is all wrapped up in the stuff around me. It's a way of saying, I don't buy into the notion that my net worth and my self-worth are the same thing. Jesus says, "No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And so in our lives, we have to make a decision. Who is going to be number one in my life? When we make God number one, and we give to him from our hearts, the grip of materialism and selfishness is broken, and we are set free. The third piece in this that I want to talk about this morning is how giving is an investment in eternity. Many years ago, there was a man, extraordinarily wealthy. He worked hard. He surrounded his life and his family with wonderful things. He saved up as much money as he could. And as he lay in his bed dying, he said to his wife, "Hon, there's one thing I want you to do for me. When I'm gone, I want you to take all the money and put it into the casket with me. I want to take it all with me." And she said, "Sure, I'll put the money in the casket there with you." The man died. They had this big, beautiful funeral for him. And just before the undertaker closed the lid on the casket, the woman slipped a box under his arm. They closed the casket, wheeled it away, and this wife's best friend turned to her and she said, "Surely you weren't so foolish as to put all the money in there with that man." And the woman said, "Absolutely. I gave him my word. I would put all the money in the casket. I cannot go back on my word." The friend said, "You mean to tell me you really put all the money in there with that man?" And the wife smiled real big and she said, "I sure did. I wrote him a check." It's true. You can't take it with you, can you? You can't take it with you. And that's why what the Apostle Paul says is so important. He says, "Use your money to do good, always being ready to share with others whatever God has given you. By doing this, you will be storing up real treasure for yourselves in heaven. It is the only safe investment for eternity, and you will have a fruitful Christian life down here as well." You know, if you want to be rich in the things of heaven, you need to take your life, you need to take your resources and invest them in the bank of heaven. It is the best investment you will ever make. It is the wisest investment that you will ever make. I'll tell you, when you do that, your life will be rich and good, and everyone around you will be blessed. And your investment in heaven will be secure. One more thing here I'd like to talk about, and that is the way how when we give, we in turn are blessed. Whenever we give our hearts, give our resources to God, there's this reflexive action that takes place where it comes back to bless us as well. That's why we find all these wonderful promises in the Bible, like Malachi 3:10, where God says, "Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room enough for it." One I just found this week, Proverbs 11, verse 25. "A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed." Proverbs 22, verse 9. "A generous man will himself be blessed." And Luke 6, 38. "Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will it be poured into your lap, for with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." So when I make God number one in my life, when he's the most important thing to me, when I give to God from my heart, God is honored, and the church is built up, and people all around are blessed, and I too am blessed. There is a man by the name of Jack Stout. He's a member of the Muskogee Seventh-day Adventist Church in Oklahoma. Back in 1997, the Muskogee Church decided to embark upon a church building program. And that meant that everyone was going to have to do something special, something extra, to get that church built. So Jack went home, he got down on his knees there beside his bed, and he said, "God, We're moving into this amazing adventure, and I want to be part of it. But what I want to know, God, is what do you want me to give to the building fund? What is it that you want me to contribute? And the Holy Spirit impressed upon his heart that he should give $30,000. God, he said, you can't be serious. I don't have that kind of money. Business is going fine. They're doing TV satellite dishes all across town. I'm doing all right, but I don't have $30,000. And God said, well, I'd like to do something very special through you. Are you on? Will you become part of this partnership? And Jack said, okay, I'm on. So Jack filled out the commitment card for $30,000 and put it in the plate the next Sabbath. Life was pretty good for the man. He and his family owned their modest home. The kids were in church school. They were keeping up with their account. He had a van that he drove around town to do his business there, putting satellite dishes in people's houses, and he was keeping up with the monthly payments on that van. Business was going pretty good. They were healthy and strong, had a good family. Life was nice and steady for them. About 2 months into the building program, they got a call on the phone one day. It was a realtor friend from across town, and he said, Jack, I remember how you and your family were interested in potentially someday finding a house farther out in the country. I've got a great place to show you. Would you like to see it? And Jack said, well, that would be nice, but right now we've made a commitment to our church, and I don't think we're going to be able to do it. The man said, well, it wouldn't hurt to take a look at the place. It won't cost you anything just to see it. So the next day, Jack and his wife went out to see this house, and it was the house of their dreams. Two floors, a year and a half old, situated on 30 lush acres. They fell in love with that house, and they made an offer on it, a couple counteroffers, and they were not accepted. A month later, they offered again. This time, their offer was accepted, and their application for a loan was approved as well. 4 months later, they moved into their dream house. Well, within a matter of a few weeks, something terrible happened. Business took a nosedive. Things were becoming very difficult. Things were downright scary, and Jack was afraid that they would lose the dream house. And what's more, things got so bad that Jack decided to stop making payments on his commitment to the building program. A couple more weeks went by, and one morning he woke up real early, and he sat up in bed, and he said, this is nuts. Why am I holding back on God? Why am I failing to trust him? I will trust him to see me through. And he began to get involved in the church building program again, turning in his pledge week by week by week. He didn't know how he was going to do it. It was just a one check at a time kind of thing, because he didn't know where the next one was coming from. But check by check, he kept doing it, and he kept praying, God, would you bless me? Would you bless my family? Would you help us to get out of debt? And suddenly, everything took off. Business kicked into high gear. It was amazing what happened. He was able to make the payment week by week. He was able to keep his kids' church school account up to par. He was able to keep up on his van payments. In fact, he got that paid off early. Then he was able to pay off his pledge to the church building program 2 years early, and 3 months after that, he got his house fully paid for 9 years in advance. Jack says there are three important lessons that he's learned out of this experience. One, it takes a lot of faith to make a commitment and to see it through. Number two, he says, God can do amazing things in a short amount of time. And number three, you can never outgive the Lord. You see, we have a God who loves us. We have a God that is lavish with his love. We have this God who is so amazingly generous with us. I mean, he created us. He gave to us the gift of life. He has faithfully sustained us down through the years. He has given us the ability to work and to make a livelihood. He has provided us with our families, our homes, a wonderful circle of friends, this amazing church. And even the ability to give in response to that love is a gift from God. Because when I give God my life, when I give God my heart, when I give God my offerings and gifts, when I give Him my worship, it's all a response to His gift in my life. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go home and celebrate God's gifts in your life. Go ahead, tally it up. All the special ways God has come through for you. All the special ways God is blessing in your life. And then I want you to do a heart check. Ask yourself, how are things between me and God? Am I growing in my relationship with Jesus? Am I becoming more and more like Him? Am I evidencing a growing generosity in my life? Am I being faithful with the tithes and the offerings? Am I being generous with my gifts and my offerings? What I'm asking you to do is to check in with God and find out what kind of miracles He's wanting to work through you in your giving. I'm asking you to prayerfully determine a personal giving plan for your life and your service here in the church and community. And then I'm asking you to implement it, to do it, to make it happen. And you know what? When you do that, the most amazing thing will happen. You will grow in your relationship with Jesus. You will help build up the church. You will make an impact on the world around you. And Jesus will be glorified and honored. Tell you what, the man's right. You can never outgive the Lord because He is the greatest lover. He is the greatest giver. Let's pray.